Speaking on behalf of Dr. Chris Mackey, and the presentation is coming up. Let me just briefly introduce Dr. Wiebe. He's a public health dentist from the city of Hamilton in Ontario, Canada. Welcome, Dr. Wiebe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, good morning. Dr. Pollack said I was probably the second token dentist. I suspect I may be the only token Canadian. I'm not sure. For those of you that don't know Hamilton, Hamilton is a city outlying about 30 minutes from Toronto. You may be more familiar with Toronto than Hamilton. So, what Dr. Mackey intended to present and told me literally in the 11th hour he could not make it because of H1N1, that I would be presenting on his behalf. So, literally, I am sort of flying by the seat of my pants. So, he was going to present on the efforts we went through to convince our city to maintain water fluoridation. For those of you that have dealt with anti-fluoridationists and plebiscites, you know the angst, the frustration, the work, violence that can be involved in a plebiscite on fluoridation. And I can tell you, I now stand before you with several layers of my skin already having been removed. So how do I... So, City of Hamilton. It's a city of just over 500,000. We are, our public health is directed by a Board of Health, and our Board of Health is made up of the Council of the City of Hamilton. So we have 16 politicians that we deal with on our Board of Health. Hamilton in the 1950s and 60s went through four plebiscites, the first two being unsuccessful, the last two were successful. And so since about the late 1960s, about 67, 68, City of Hamilton has been fluoridated. In 2007, the city was notified by the public department that our water purification system needed to be updated at considerable expense, and within that, our fluoridation equipment had to be updated. The anti-fluoridationists got hold of this piece of information and decided we had prime time to lobby yet again because of the economic status in the city of Hamilton, that this would probably be a good opportunity to remove fluoride from our water. They felt they could be successful because just previous to them, there was another lobbying group that was successful in removing pesticides from our city. For those of you that deal with fluoride, you're certainly well aware of the Fluoride Action Group. They became very alive and well in our city, and we're starting to send numerous emails to our councillors, to the point where the councillors were starting to refer to fluoride as one of the biggest government conspiracies in history. And so they asked us, Public Health, to put forth a report to the board outlining the pros, the cons, the benefits, the negativities, the risks, anything we could around fluoride. But along with that, they wanted us to outline in great detail the cost of alternate delivery of fluoride to our constituents should they decide to remove fluoride from the water. And I'll talk about the alternates because it became very fascinating. So some of the strategies we used to convince the Board of Health to maintain fluoride in our water. One, it's not just good enough to have scientific and health-based information. You have to have arguments. It's absolutely crucial in these sorts of situations to understand the scientific evidence about the health benefits and risk of water fluoridation, but it's also equally critical to understand the arguments on the impact of fluoride on the environment, occupational health and safety issues for plant operators, as well as the economic side. And there are a lot of arguments on these levels, and it was our job to debunk all of these beliefs. It's a complex issue. One-on-one, face-to-face is really the only option you have, especially in a community of our size. Fluoridation is controversial, and it appears to be that there's only two sides that appear to have equal weight to the politician. So it's important to be able to talk to the politicians through the issues of water fluoridation, not at an adversarial environment through a public board meeting, but one-on-one privately. If they hear two sides at a public meeting, that's all they have to go by. So you have to get to them one-on-one, and that was the most key issue we faced. We had 16 councillors, and you have to keep that in mind because that's how we approached it. Arguments matter, but for politicians, voices are louder. So it's important to remember that politicians, at least in Ontario, they're not accountable to critical appraisal or peer review by scientific panel. They are accountable to voters, which means that they are sometimes swayed by the number and loudness of the voices they hear on an issue, rather than on the researched evidence. And I can tell you, as I said, the network, we were getting emails, dozens and dozens of emails from around the world and from the United States as far away as Hawaii. So the politicians were being inundated with misinformation. So some of the things we had to do, we obviously conducted several systematic reviews of the literature, and I'll get to that later. But Dr. Mackey invited all 16 of the politicians to have a one-on-one meeting with him, a face-to-face. And he literally spent anywhere from 1.5 to 2 hours with each politician talking privately. Of the 16, 10 accepted. And there he discussed their concerns and offered to address them in the report that we were going to do. And it's kind of important to remember that 10 accepted his invitation of the 16 when we were going to present. So when we went with a philosophy that there were sort of three goals when you're meeting with a politician. The first goal is to build a relationship. If they like and trust you, they are more likely to support you. The second goal was to get them to understand your issues and perspectives. If they get it, they're more likely to look into the matter more in detail, find information, and they're more likely to support you. The third goal, obviously, was to get them to agree with you. That's pretty hard to do in 1.5 to 2 hours. If we won, that was great. If we didn't, so be it. So relationship, understanding, and agreement are all important, but the relationship was by far the most important goal that we were trying to attain. And again, I'll talk about the Board of Health report that we did a little later. So we had to explain why there was a controversy. And it really resulted over reviews. And we had to explain to the counselors that anti-fluoridationists did selective reviews. So they would pick articles. We use the phrase cherry pick. They would pick articles that suited their argument. They didn't have to be quality articles. Anything that would support them, they used. And really nonspecific. Anything that referred to a poison, they just threw out in front of the politicians. On the other side, as public health people and agencies of public health, we had to take the high road, the scientific road. So we actually posed a question. We tried to get a blank page. Is fluoride safe? Is it beneficial? And we tried to, you know, keep our answer or our thoughts or our beliefs separate. So we did examine all relevant information. We did systematic reviews, but we only included high-quality articles. And so the politicians really had a hard time understanding between a selective review and a true systematic review. But we think they got it. I'll go back to the selective review. The anti-fluoridationists are very good at twisting the truth and often did so. And my partner has a very good expression that I like to use. You don't have to lie, but the truth is optional. And the anti-fluoridationists were very great at doing that. Positive peer pressure. Where am I? Am I back here? Yeah. So the other thing that came about was the dose determines the poison. Politicians just saw fluoride as a poison and could not get over the fact that it was dose-related. And so we tried to educate them. Yes, at very high acute levels, 4,000 milligrams and higher, fluoride could be a poison, but so could anything else be. If you have high long-term levels and use of fluoride above 4.0, there might be moderate to severe fluorosis, and there's possible risks to fluoride. However, low long-term levels of fluoride, 1.0 part per million or less, at very best you're going to obtain mild fluorosis. So we really had to educate the politicians on doses related to poison. Positive peer pressure, again, we had to correct them on misinformation. The anti-fluoridation has taken great delight in giving information that various areas were reducing fluoride or removing fluoridation, and they cited Niagara Falls, which is neighboring to Hamilton. They cited Quebec City and British Columbia, and if you're not familiar with Canadian geography, my apologies. But the information they gave was not factual. Did Niagara discontinue fluoride? Yes, but it was due to mechanical differences. They neglected to state that it reinstituted it. Our research and review of information out there actually indicated to us that fluoridation was increasing in Canada, United States, and Australia. The other thing that we found helpful to us was to have a list of endorsements, and the politicians actually asked us. They wanted a complete list of all agencies, government bodies, anybody that had a public statement, a position paper, or anything that supported water fluoridation, and what was the last year that they issued such a statement. This is actually an abbreviated list. We had pages. And believe it or not, one politician, and I use the word politician, actually said to us, why would we believe all those agencies? They're all government. And we were talking to a politician. So, options. One thing they wanted in the report, and we literally had a binder full of options, they wanted to know the cost of delivering fluoride and alternate methods to the community of Hamilton, 500,000 people, should they decide to discontinue water fluoridation. And they literally wanted everything from delivering sealants, topical fluorides, other preventive measures to all the residents, either through public health or through private practitioners, right down to the politician actually wanted to know what it would cost to mail a toothbrush and a tube of toothpaste to every household in the city of Hamilton. And they were actually willing to consider that as an option. So I abbreviated chart, we just highlighted four of them. So we actually looked at topical application by public health personnel twice a year, topical application by private dentists twice a year, mailing a toothbrush and toothpaste to the households in Hamilton, and of course maintaining water fluoridation. And if you look at the far right column, annual budgets, I mean it becomes apparent, you know, you're looking at 13.8 million, and we put it down to various groups, so children, or everybody that was at high risk, children, and all those on LICOS. LICOS is our abbreviation for low-income households, using low-income households only. So kind of gave some very general categories, and the far right shows that to deliver topical fluoride by public health could be anywhere from $4.9 to $13.8 million. If they went to a private practitioner, it would be anywhere from $10 to $29.8 million. Giving a toothbrush, $3.2 million. And of course, maintaining water fluoridation at 0.6 part per million was only $1.2 million. So obviously very cost effective to anything else. And there was a whole book of combination permutations of what we could deliver and who we would deliver it to and the cost of it. I mean, we needed a statistician to give the politicians this information, but this is a very concise summary of it. Other arguments we had to use and fight the anti-fluoridation against, we gave the counselors information on comparisons of neighboring geographic areas that were also fluoridated. We gave them studies on before and after communities that were fluoridated and then ceased, and fluoridation areas that were not fluoridated and incorporated fluoridation. We gave them before and after studies. And we also gave them studies on lab research and clinical trials. Somewhat effective, but it really came down to that one-to-one interface. Okay. Other questions we had to answer, of course, and you've all heard it, it's mass medication. This was a real boogeyman that we had to clarify with the board. Fluoride in the water is not used as a medication at medicinal purpose or doses. It's used as a supplement at trace levels. There are certainly other substances that can be used as medication that are also used in other ways. iodine. Iodine is a prime example. It can be used as a medication, it can be used in sterilization, it's used in explosives, and it's also used as a food supplement. And the question we asked them is, when you sprinkle a bit of salt on your potato, are you not medicating yourself? You're not. We also had to deal with the concept of informed consent. Could we be giving more information to the public? Absolutely. And within our report, we put out a program, if they were willing to fund it, for information sessions, health promotion, all kinds of activities that we could inform the public on fluoridation. Is fluoridation equitable? Well, the science suggests that it benefits the most for those that are greatest at risk, so we deemed it to be equitable to have water fluoridation. Is it universal? Well, fluoride, for most of all, does benefit everyone. It may benefit children most, and possibly those on low income, but the latest peer-reviewed article suggests that adults benefit from topical fluoride as well. We also had to deal with the issue that fluoride was a poison and came from fertilizer as a byproduct of pesticide production, which we had to inform them that it was false. There are many other compounds that come from industrial sources. Medications come from petroleum-based products. Iodine, originally from gunpowder. Iron from smelting. So we had to tell them that the important thing is not where it comes from, but how safe it is. And our fluoride passed all safety level tests in Hamilton. The end result, we went to council. The meeting started at 9 in the morning. It ended at 3:30 and was nothing but constant debate about fluoride. Of the 16 councillors, I said 10 accepted the invitation to be educated one-on-one. They had a ballot, and it passed 9 in favor and 7 against. So really, your best avenue is to hit the people that are voting, the councillors, one-on-one and educate them one-on-one. Thank you.
There is continuing education forms available for those of you who came in after we started. Dr. Capelli, who's standing at the back there, has those. Also, if you'd complete those before you leave so that he can then send them off to ADA and you can receive a certificate through the mail or by email. At this time, we are running over time, but I know a lot of you are interested in the subject, so those of you who have to leave, I understand, but those of you who wish to stay and enter into discussion, please remain. It was reported by Dr. Bill Bailey here at this meeting yesterday, I believe, an update on CDC figures on the proportion of the population on public water systems that are receiving fluoridated water now. Do you want to give us an update briefly, Dr. Bailey?
Well, just briefly, in 2006, we were at 69.1%.
Thank you, Dr. Bailey. Dr. Horowitz.
Well, I would just like to add one thing for the glorifying of the focus groups. It's not just, we found the same thing among the Latinos in D.C., that they're afraid of the water, plus there are entrepreneurs who are selling water filtration systems, so everybody wants to make money. But in
So that's important information, and certainly a lot of our the infrastructure for the water system is aging and is slowly being replaced and upgraded to make water more palatable. I think we've had a wide-ranging discussion this morning about issues around fluoridation, yet we see that fluoridation continues to increase in terms of the population served. I want to thank everybody in the audience for every effort that you've made to maintain the oral health of the community. Where you go in the booths, take a look at the booths and see, are they promoting fluoride? Are they not promoting fluoride? It's an ongoing issue. I want to thank all of our speakers for their excellent presentations and for staying on time. And please join me in thanking all of them.